Today on Enduring Word with David Guzik, pastor of Calvary Chapel, Santa Barbara.
He didn't want any human sacrifice. Oh, those wicked gods of the Canaanites, they received human sacrifice. It was a bloody, inhumane religion that they followed. But ladies and gentlemen, God never wanted a human sacrifice. So he said, don't sacrifice the firstborn to me. Instead, redeem them with money. Redeem them with a substitute of money. And that's your way of dedicating the firstborn unto me, because the firstborn is mine.
After their deliverance from Egypt, the Lord immediately began giving the Jews instructions on how to live. He also reminded the people that everything they owned belonged to God and was provided by Him. Pastor David points out that when Jesus saves us and gives us our freedom from sin, He doesn't let us continue to act as the world does. Instead, He commands us to obey Him and His Word. Because everything that we own, even our very lives, comes from the Lord. He deserves our allegiance and generosity. Now, let's join Pastor David for today's message.
And then it says here as well that if you would say the first fruit of the crop was consecrated to God, but the entire harvest was His. Ladies and gentlemen, do we have that securely in our own minds? Yes, I hope you give of your resources to God. And I think a tenth is a wonderful measuring mark. I think under the new covenant, we have a glorious liberty to give more. But under the tenth is a glorious measuring mark right there for you giving unto God. But ladies and gentlemen, don't think for a moment that if you give God 10%, then 90% is yours. It's all belonging to God. And the tenth is just a picture. It's just a consecration of the whole. That's why God says, the firstborn belongs to me. All Israel is mine, but dedicate unto me the firstborn in a special way. Did you see what he said right there in verse 2? He said, it is mine. It was God's claim, and he settled it in as soon as he gave him freedom. Again, I want to come back to that point. As soon as God gave them freedom, he started telling them what to do. He did not set them free from Egypt so that they could do whatever they wanted to do. I just sort of imagine that in my mind. You see, the very end of chapter 12 said this, that they came out of the land of Egypt according to their armies. And so I think of Israel making sort of an orderly exit from Egypt, coming out in some kind of orderly fashion. And then I think of the contrast to that. It's like, okay, you're free from Egypt, and everybody goes their own way. You have people going north, south, east, west. Everybody just goes their own way because we're free. We're not under bondage anymore. And God says, no, that's not it at all. Now you're free to follow me. I think this was very powerful what the Lord was saying. If the goal was just for you to have maximum individual freedom to do whatever you wanted to do, then God would say, all right, free yourself from Egypt. Go ahead. Why don't you try bringing on the plagues? Why don't you try breaking Pharaoh's heart? Why don't you try doing all these things? It was the Lord who set them free. It was the Lord who had claim over their lives, over their obedience. Verse 3. And Moses said to the people, remember this day in which you went out of Egypt, out of the house of bondage, for by strength of hand the Lord brought you out of this place. No leavened bread shall be eaten. On this day you are going out in the month Abib. It shall be so when the Lord brings you into the land of the Canaanites, and the Hittites, and the Amorites, and the Hivites, and the Jebusites, which he swore to give your fathers to give you, a land flowing with milk and honey, that you shall keep this service this month. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread, and on the seventh day there shall be a feast unto the Lord. Unleavened bread shall be eaten 7 days, and no leavened bread shall be seen among you, and nor shall leaven be seen among you in all your quarters. Again, the purity of the feast of unleavened bread followed upon the blood deliverance of Passover. And this illustrates this principle that we can only walk in the purity before the Lord after we've received that blood deliverance from the cross. But I like what it says there in verse 6. Did you notice? It says there, and on the seventh day there shall be a feast unto the Lord. You see, these days of unleavened bread were not sad, tragic days. It was a feast. It was a party. We've been set free. We're living the life God intends us to live. Things are good. It was a life filled with joy. Verse 8, And you shall tell your son in that day, saying, this is done because of what the Lord did for me when I came up from Egypt. It shall be as a sign on your hand, a memorial between your eyes, that the Lord's law may be in your mouth. For with a strong hand the Lord has brought you up out of Egypt. You shall therefore keep this ordinance in its season from year to year. God wanted their freedom from Egypt to be constantly before their eyes, as close as their hand. He wanted them to be locked into the great freedom that he had given them. Now verse 11, and it shall be when the Lord brings you into the land of the Canaanites, as he swore to you and your fathers, and gives it to you, that you shall be set apart to the Lord, all that opens the womb. That is, every firstborn that comes from an animal which you have, the males shall be the Lord's. But every firstborn of a donkey you shall redeem with a lamb. And if you will not redeem it, then you shall break its neck. And then all the firstborn of man among your sons you shall redeem. So it shall be when your son asks you in time to come, what is this? You shall say to him, by strength of hand the Lord brought us out of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. And it came to pass when Pharaoh was stubborn about letting us go that the Lord killed all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both the firstborn of man and the firstborn of beast. Therefore I sacrifice to the Lord all males that open the womb, but the firstborn of my sons I redeem. It shall be for a sign on your hand and frontlets between your eyes, for by strength of hand the Lord brought us up out of Egypt. He said, listen, I'm going to bring you into the land of the Canaanites. And when I bring you there, I want you to honor me by sacrificing the firstborn, as was indicated before. But listen, some of the firstborn would be unclean animals, and those you wouldn't sacrifice to the Lord. And even more so, some of the firstborn would be people, and you would never sacrifice a person before the Lord. God had demonstrated that very powerfully in the scriptures, that he didn't want any human sacrifice. Oh, those wicked gods of the Canaanites, they received human sacrifice. It was a bloody, inhumane religion that they followed. But ladies and gentlemen, God never wanted a human sacrifice. So he said, don't sacrifice the firstborn to me. Instead, redeem them with money. Redeem them with a substitute of money. And that's your way of dedicating the firstborn unto me, because the firstborn is mine. Now, verse 17. After all these instructions, look now, verse 17. Then it came to pass when Pharaoh had let the people go, that God did not lead them by the way of the land of the Philistines, although that was near. For God said, lest perhaps the people change their minds when they see war and return to Egypt. So God led the people around by the way of the wilderness of the Red Sea, and the children of Israel went up in orderly ranks out of the land of Egypt. Listen, this is fascinating. Did you notice what it says right there in verse 17? It says that God did not lead them by way of the land of the Philistines, even though that was near. Now, I don't know if you've ever known this before, but there was a good, convenient, efficient road that went from Egypt to Canaan. It was called the Via Maris, the way of the sea. And it went right along the red there, indicated by that red line that you see on the map. A nice, efficient, there were traders along the route. There were, you know, facilities. It was like the nice road. It was the way to get from Egypt to the land of Canaan. And you would just think, if you're going to lead 2 million people from Egypt to Canaan, why don't you take the nice road? I'll tell you why God said, we're not going to take the nice road. It was because there were Egyptian military outposts all along the way. And God knew that his people were not yet ready to face those military outposts. So what did God do? God said, we're going to go a different way. We're not going to go the way of the Via Maris. Instead, we're going to go now over to the east and to the south. And we'll talk a little bit more about the exact direction that they took. But ladies and gentlemen, this was a dramatic thing that God did. It would have been easy for the Israelites to think that the Via Maris was the way to go. It made sense to go that way. But the dangers of the way were too great, even though they could not see them. Now, there are some of you who wonder why God has led you along a certain path in your life. When you think it is so obvious, God, that the way I thought was better. Come on, Lord, you're smart, aren't you? Can you simply appreciate that there may have been untold dangers along that way that you never saw and that you were not ready for. Now, God was ready for them. God knew them. But God says, my dear child, I won't allow them to be tested beyond what they are able. I'm going to lead them along this other way. God will never allow us to face more than we are able to bear. Oh, not more than we're able to bear trusting in ourselves, but more than we're able to bear trusting in him. I like what this old Puritan commentator, John Trapp, said this. He said that God so orders the matter so that evils are not ready for us until we are ready for them. And that's exactly what God was doing with Israel. So he said, no, I'm going to take you by way of the wilderness of the Red Sea. Now, I don't know, their hearts must have sank a little bit. Nice, easy, quick road to Canaan. Forget it. We're going by way of the wilderness, but it was God's plan, it was God's path, and it was good for Israel. Now, this is something I want you to pick up on right away. What is God doing? Right away, God is guiding them. God is governing them. He says, you are free. Now let me guide you. Ladies and gentlemen, this is such a big point. In some ways, it's kind of heavy on my heart because I'll bump into Christians here and there. I'll bump into people who really are followers of Jesus Christ, at least in their hearts there are, but they just kind of have this mentality that says this, Jesus has set me free. See you, Jesus. Don't tell me what else to do now. It says, no. If he's brought you out of Egypt, he has the authority, he has the power to guide you in your freedom. Verse 19, and Moses took the bones of Joseph with him, for he had placed the children of Israel under solemn oath, saying, God will surely visit you, and you will carry up my bones from here with you. So in a great act of faith, centuries before, that great man Joseph had asked that his bones would not remain in Egypt, but rather that they would be taken with them when they left the land of Egypt. Joseph knew 400 years prior to this that they were not going to stay in Egypt, that they were going to go back to Canaan. Look for 400 years for that promise to be fulfilled. I know some of you, you've been waiting a long time for God's promise in your life. Anybody been here waiting 400 years? That's the kind of faith Joseph had, to believe God for something that wouldn't be fulfilled for more than 400 years down the road. Verse 20, so they took their journey from Succoth and camped at Etham. By the way, Etham, we just don't know where it is. We just don't. People speculate. We just don't know. It's out there somewhere. They camped in Etham at the edge of the wilderness, and the Lord went before them by day in a pillar of cloud to lead the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light, so as to go by day and night. He did not take away the pillar of cloud by day or the pillar of fire by night from before the people. Ladies and gentlemen, can you let the movie run in your mind just for a minute? Because let me tell you, these events actually happened. There really was a pillar of fire with Israel through all their wilderness wanderings, starting right here in Exodus chapter 13. There was a pillar of fire by night and a pillar of cloud by day. And it was the demonstration that the Lord went before them. He showed them his presence in a dramatic, glorious way, giving them constant assurance. You could also say this, that his pillar of fire and the pillar of cloud was there to be a sun and a shield for them. I don't mean to make this trite, but you know what that pillar of fire was? It was a great big nightlight for the whole nation. And do you know what that pillar of cloud was? I believe that God positioned that pillar of cloud to block out the sun at times, to give them shade in the midst of the wilderness. Why would I say such a thing? Look at it here, Psalm 105, verse 39. He spread a cloud for a covering and a fire to give light in the night. Now that's a nightlight, and that's an umbrella for you, isn't it? God says, here's going to be my presence with you, this pillar of cloud by day and fire by night, not just to show that I'm here, not just to give you an emblem of my presence, but to do some good for you. And that's exactly what God did. But then he did something else with this. It's staggering to think about. This pillar of fire or the pillar of cloud would move and guide them where they were supposed to go. Could you imagine following where God wanted you to go on those days without a GPS? Look, some of you can't do it with a GPS. Oh, but Israel didn't have to worry about that. They had, what would you call it? They would call it a true GPS, God's positioning system. And just follow this, just follow God's positioning system. He'll give you that guidance through the pillar of cloud by day and fire by night. And it says right there very powerfully in verse 22, he did not take away the pillar of cloud by day or the pillar of fire by night from before the people. Could you imagine any picture of what somebody might think that this pillar of cloud or fire might be? It would just look cheesy. There's no way that it could look glorious and profound and beautiful the way that it must have actually looked. But picture it in your mind with all of its presence, with all of its power, with all of its glory. And ladies and gentlemen, you look to that, and I know what you're thinking right now. You think, man, if I was there in Israel and God gave me that kind of thing, I would never doubt him again. Who could ever doubt again? If God gave you something as glorious as this pillar of cloud or this pillar of fire, you would always know that he was with you. You would always know that he was guiding you. It would help you out in very practical ways with shade and with being a nightlight. Oh, Lord, if you just gave me that, I would never, ever doubt you again. And then you should think two things on that. First of all, you should think this. Did Israel ever doubt him again? Well, of course they did. Now, are you and I so different than they? Well, hold that thought for future weeks. We're not so different than they. But secondly, I want you to think about this. Maybe you would think of this. Oh, God, if only you gave me some extreme revelation of your love and care. Only if you would give to me a gift so precious that would do for me what I could never do for myself, something that would set me right in a way that would be eternal, something that would just demonstrate your love so that I could never doubt it again and again. Ladies and gentlemen, you know what we're talking about, right? God has done it for you at the cross. What Jesus did for you and I at the cross is more wonderful than a pillar of fire by night and cloud by day. I guarantee you that. No, what Jesus did at the cross is the ultimate demonstration of love. And that's what needs to sink down into your soul and into my soul. All right, in just the few minutes I have remaining with you now, let me go over some thoughts that I have from this chapter that were meaningful to me, at least. I hope they're meaningful to you. First of all, there's the tremendous theme of freedom throughout this whole chapter. It's glorious. They were free to leave Egypt. They were free because of Passover and the plague that God put upon the firstborn of Egypt. They were free to give themselves to God. They were free to walk pure from leaven, that is sin. God put them on a new life, not just a freedom from Egypt. They were free to follow God's guidance. They were free to know God's presence right there in front of them, right there beside them. Ladies and gentlemen, that's freedom. And I know that I'm speaking to lives right now that desperately need this freedom in Jesus Christ. You need it. You need to be set free. Whatever it is, the issue or the problem or the difficulty in your life, you just feel almost submerged by it. You feel so much in bondage that sometimes you can hardly breathe. Ladies and gentlemen, I want you to believe it with all of your heart that Jesus Christ came to set you free from that. And that your Passover lamb, Jesus, willingly gave him up as a sacrifice, gave himself up to die on that cross so that you can be free. And I want to emphasize, it's not a freedom just for you to do your own thing. It's not what true freedom is. It's a freedom to do his thing, to love him and to follow him in spirit and in truth. That's the first thing I see, just the great presence of freedom throughout this. So the second thing I see is that all this freedom came from the strength of God's hand. What do I mean by that? I don't know if you picked it up. To be honest, I didn't pick it up on my first reading of this text. But after I read it for a while, I picked up a little pattern, a little emphasis here in Exodus chapter 13. Well, look at it with me. Verse 3, "For by the strength of the hand of the Lord, brought you out of this place. Verse 9, for with a strong hand the Lord has brought you out of Egypt. Verse 14, by the strength of the hand of the Lord brought us out of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. Verse 16, for by the strength of the hand of the Lord brought us out of Egypt. Get a little theme here recurring in chapter 13. God's strong hand reaching out to you to give you freedom. Four times in this chapter, God speaks of his strong hand. He wants us to know, he wants us to trust in the strength of the Lord. So I want you to think about that strong hand of God extended towards you. And friends, I'm here to tell you, there's nothing weak about that hand of God. That hand of God is mighty to save, and it's extended out towards you right here, right now. God's hand will reach you wherever you are. It's reaching out to you. You can just reach out in your own heart, in your own faith, and just draw near to God because his strong hand is reached out to you. But secondly, his strong hand is mightier than any adversary you have. I don't know what it is in your life. It's fear, it's unbelief, it's bitterness, it's some kind of bondage, it's some kind of addiction, it's some kind of habit. I don't know what it is, but I guarantee you, whatever you've got in your life, it's not stronger than the strong hand of the Lord. His hand reaches out to you to rescue you, and don't despair. Instead, look at that strong hand and say, yes, Lord, that's for me. It's mighty to save. But thirdly, here's the point. God's strong hand is extended towards you. God's strong hand is mightier than any adversary or any difficulty in your life. But friends, here's the thing. You have to reach out and take hold of that strong hand of God. Matter of fact, why don't I change that metaphor just a little bit? It's not that you reach out and take hold of it. How about this? You reach out and he takes hold of your hand. I'm more confident in God's grip on me than I'm confident on my grip on him. But I know that if I reach out in faith and allow him to grab a hold of me, he will answer. And that's for you. That's for me. Here's the third thing. I see myself in this text in a very special way. It doesn't always happen that way for me, but sometimes when I read the Bible, I go, that's me. I'm right there. Can you figure out where I saw myself in the text? And I don't know, maybe it's some of you as well. But here, I'll tell you where I saw myself in this text. It's in verse 13. Take a look at it with me. Verse 13. Exodus 13, 13. But every firstborn of a donkey you shall redeem with a lamb. And if you will not redeem it, then you shall break its neck. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm the donkey. No, really. I'm like an unclean animal before the Lord. And even if I were to go to God and say, I'll sacrifice myself, what would God say? He'll say, you're unclean. You can't sacrifice yourself, but you can have a lamb sacrificed on your behalf. And you know what, Mr. Donkey? Then you can live. You live because the lamb gave its life for your sake. There you are, as if you were an unclean animal. But God says, even though this animal by right should die because it belongs to me, no, no, I'll receive the sacrifice of the lamb instead of it. So come and bring that lamb, and then that unclean donkey can live. Maybe I'm speaking this morning to a few unclean donkeys in our midst. Nothing personal. Well, look, maybe everything personal by that. Because we need to come and trust, and what our Passover lamb has done on our behalf.
Well, that concludes the teaching portion of today's broadcast of Enduring Word with Pastor David Guzik of Calvary Chapel of Santa Barbara. Join us next time as Pastor David continues teaching verse by verse through the book of Exodus. Again, you've been listening to Enduring Word, the teaching ministry of Pastor David Guzik of Calvary Chapel in Santa Barbara, California. You can learn a great deal about Enduring Word by visiting our website. The web address is enduringword.com. That's enduringword.com. You can listen to the rest of Pastor David's messages from the book of Exodus, as well as other messages taught from God's Word right from the main menu. Simply click on Media at enduringword.com. The best place to obtain Pastor David's teaching is through the Enduring Word podcast. log on to enduringword.com and click on the media option and then podcast. Once you subscribe, you'll always receive the latest messages from Pastor David. Again, the website for all this information is enduringword.com. So log on to enduringword.com and continue studying with us today. If you'd like to talk with someone here at the church, call us at 805-730-1400. That's 805-730-1400. Once again, you've been listening to Enduring Word with Pastor David Guzik of Calvary Chapel in Santa Barbara, California, a listener-supported program. Please tune in next time as Pastor David continues teaching verse by verse through the book of Exodus. That's next time on Enduring Word.